Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and today I'm joined by James and Ed at ACS to preview the budget. And it's a bit of a strange one this time around, because usually what happens is we get a broad idea of the sense of direction from the government in the weeks leading up to the budget, and then a sprinkling of one or two headline policies in the weekend before. But it seems like the Treasury themselves have been using everyone as a bit of a focus group, throwing ideas out there over the last couple of months and seeing which ones get the least negative reaction. What we do know for sure, though, is there's a great big hole in the public finances, and Rachel Reeves has to find a way to fill it. James, a more general question before we get into specifics on policy. Last year, the government leaned heavily on business to raise revenues, particularly through increases in employment costs. What impact do you think that's had so far over the year that we've had now? And was it the right thing to do looking back?
Well, when you look at our local shop report, which you have, Chris, because you put it together, there are a couple of indicators that might give the answer to that. So jobs were down slightly, very slightly, in the local shop report. Investment levels were down. And I think that can be in part attributed to the decisions made this time last year or last October by the Chancellor. So increasing those national insurance contributions, obviously it makes employing people more expensive. People look to cut back hours wherever they can, and they look at what else they can do to mitigate that. And of course, the other thing that happened last April is that business rates, the bills went up for retailers as the COVID relief, if you like, the retail hospitality leisure relief was pared back. So those things over combined, and combined with relatively tough trading times for our sector, I think has led to that. So yeah, you see the outcome, whatever happens on Wednesday, you'll see the outcome of that in the market. You'll see that in the economic indicators, and you'll see it very much on the ground as well in terms of where our members are trading and the impact on their businesses.
Yeah, and just on the local shop report, I mean, usually we talk about growth and we talk about, you know, an increase pretty consistently, and it's always a bit of a hesitation when we have something where we say, actually, we're looking at contractions here, we're looking at reductions. But I think anyone talking about growth at the moment is kind of in a minority, and particularly in the retail sector, you know, that's not reflecting what retailers are telling us.
Well, maybe our sector's were less affected than some. I mean, there are some parts of the retail industry and some sets of the parts of the economy are really, struggling. And I think, you know, our sector, it is clearly a tough time for our sector. We wouldn't want to gloss over that, but we are more resilient than most. And I think, you know, I'm still very optimistic about our sector and whatever happens on Wednesday, but there's certainly some things the Chancellor could do to help, and we really need that help now.
Yeah. So Ed, James has framed that in terms of help. Do you think government will be going back to business this time around for more money, or is this going to be much more about wider taxation?
I think what we've seen, and as you characterised what was happening in the lead up to the budget, the Treasury are going to have to look across a wider range of interventions to raise the funds to fill that black hole. We were talking a lot about income tax rising, and the government have moved back from that now. So actually what I think we're going to see is them picking a number of small taxes across a wider group of people to try and fill that hole. And some of those may fall on business. Where is a big question, but it also might be if we don't get as much support on some of the key areas that we really need support in, like business rates, which James made, that could make the difference.
Yeah. Let's talk about business rates then, because while we don't know for sure anything really that's going to be in the budget, because so much has been mooted ahead of time, we can be pretty certain that something's going to change when it comes to business rates. Ed, what's the current state of affairs on business rates, and what levers have the government got to pull without just tearing up the whole system?
Sure. We've been talking about business rates for a long time. Mm. And with this government, they have made some long-standing commitments to reform the business rate system. As they've got into government, that has then looked at how they can help retail, hospitality and leisure businesses with lower business rates bills. And then they've become more specific to say that is for smaller businesses, so businesses under £51,000 rateable value, and those under £500,000 rateable value, we get some kind of relief. The sense is what, how much will that relief be? And what we've called for is very clearly that they introduce reliefs that would put that down by 20p on the multiplier, which would essentially be about equivalent to that 40% relief that exists now in the market. So that's really what we're pushing for. We know that they're committed to reducing the bills for retail, hospitality and leisure properties, but we need to know exactly how much, and that's what we're going to find out.
Yeah, and James, is there a bit of a tension here between small businesses and large businesses? Because we've seen previously in business, it's kind of a hat on a hat on a hat to change the system in minor ways. We seem to have two ends of the spectrum here, with us and others calling for
relief for the smallest businesses, that retail and hospitality leisure, but there's been a lot of campaigning on the top end as well, mm-hmm. those businesses over 500,000. Do you get a sense that the government can do both? Are they going to have to make a choice? Are they going to have to pick their favourite child? What are we looking at here?
They're going to have to make some choices across those three bands, because the middle band as well, and what reductions or increases they bring in. They give themselves the capability to do that. So now how much they use those powers. And the reason they got themselves into what is, I think, a little bit of a mess on this is that this was framed as, the rationale for this was that, if you like, super rate on business rates would relate to online giants. It would relate to the big online operators, warehouses, yeah. Amazon. It seems a way of sort of making, I'm going to say Amazon because we're talking about Amazon to a large extent here, and others, making them pay a fairer chunk of business rates, whereas it's seen as being a model that circumvented business rates to some degree. So that's how it was framed when it came in. That's how the policy was announced. By just having a business rates level, you incorporate all the businesses over that level, whether they're online giants or anyone else. And of course, and I remember the conversation here when we were talking about the same, what's the rateable value of the Ritz? What's the rateable value of big hotels? What's the rateable value of, and the answer is there's some high rateable value for supermarkets. A lot of supermarkets have got high rateable values and they're caught by this. Other retailers, department stores and others, some big hospitality premises as well. So those businesses are saying, well, you never wanted to catch us. That was never what the debate was about. Now we're caught and we want that. And I understand that argument. We've got to stay laser focused on what's needed for those businesses under 51,000 rateable value. And what's needed is the full 20% reduction in the multiplier, which, as Ed says, would counteract the loss of that retail hospitality leisure relief. Because what I worry about, almost from the government's point of view, is that they'll bring in a measure, they might come up with some reduction for those businesses and feel they've done a great thing going forward, and it might be a good policy going forward. But what retailers will see in April is their business rates bills go up, possibly quite significantly, because they've lost that 40% relief. And I think that won't land as the government wants to. And obviously, more importantly, from our point of view, it will put more pressure on those businesses that, as we said at the beginning, are already in pretty challenging circumstances at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it shows, it's another example of a business rate system that feels increasingly less fit for purpose. And we've been talking about this for decades at this point. But there's just another example of something that's intended to meet my thing, but they can only do it by a property's physical footprint. And that's an issue that we've got.
It would also be a great way for the government to get back on their focus around growth. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the time people are asking around core messaging for the government is around, you know, delivering growth. Business rates for us is a big route to that, because not just the multiplier, but also where business rates apply. So, for example, you put CCTV in your premises, your business rates go up. That can't be a positive way to encourage businesses to invest. So a clear approach from the Treasury around business rates is really going to help drive businesses think about those investments.
Yeah, absolutely. And in our submission, we asked for CCTV to be pulled out of the rating list altogether, and a very sensible measure. People shouldn't have to be paying twice for that. Related to CCTV, more widely on crime, we've heard that the government is now planning to scrap police and crime commissioners in 2028, at the end of this next election cycle, with the reason being given that it will save £100 million of taxpayers' money. It's not quite the full black hole that we're recouping there, but some way towards it. James, what do we make so far of the police and crime commissioner error?
Is it an error? I think...
Either way.
I am torn on this, to be honest with you, because I've seen two things. You know, one is some individual police and crime commissioners, and I'm just the ones we've known best. There are others are available, but, you know, Katie Bourne in Sussex, Donna Jones in Hampshire, Matthew Barber in Thames Valley, Simon Foster in the West Midlands, and many others we've worked with who have been the sort of convening point, focal point, driving force behind some really good initiatives locally about and all the things we talk about all the time, catching, identifying repeat offenders, effective penalties, and they've really... I think they have made a really significant practical difference in some of those areas. The question, I suppose, is could that activity still be done without someone there with the title of police and crime commissioner? My instinct is yes. It's about the right people being engaged and delivering the action. I don't think necessarily think it needs a police and crime commissioner role to do that, but I think that them being there has helped to drive some of those things forward. What matters is what happens next. You know, I don't think we're mourning the loss of police and crime commissioners as much as we've had good experiences of those individuals and others that I've mentioned there. But I think that we have to make sure that focus stays and there's that continued drive behind sensible, effective partnership working to stop reoffending and to make a dent on the incessant rise in retail crime. And I think that, you know, it's a shame to lose some allies in that fight, but I believe that we can continue to fight that fight with other people.
Sure. Ed, we've heard that there are likely to be these roles being taken up in mayor's offices where available, or by local councils where there's no mayors available. How important is it to have a local driving force when it comes to tackling crime in this area?
Yeah, really important. I think the creation of the deputy mayors dedicated around police and crime will enable us to have the conversations that we've had with those excellent police and crime commissioners that James mentioned. And that is really important, because actually lots of the crime solutions now, as much as we've got great legislation going through, are operational. They're about what happens on the ground. They're about relationships between businesses and neighbourhood policing teams. So absolutely essential that we still have that mechanism in. I think the other thing to notice on the horizon is that there's a policing white paper that's going to be announced some time slightly after the budget, which is going to restructure policing. So we're going to have some national structures and then some neighbourhood policing structures locally. And of course, for us, a lot of the crime around shop theft and those things are happening at neighbourhood level. So we still need that engagement point there, as well as having these new national structures. So as much like James, I'm slightly torn, we've done some great work with police and crime commissioners, but we've still got an opportunity to have that conversation in those new structures.
Of course, Katie Bourne and Donna Jones both running to be mayor of Sussex and Hampshire, respectively. Sure. Whether they'll be successful or not, who knows? But I mean, it probably shows that that's maybe where it will be, through those offices, a lot of this work is going to be done in the future.
Yeah, I guess the potential concern is for areas that don't have mayors. Yes. And then you've got councils that are particularly stretched anyway, and maybe a bit of a sort of patchwork of parties in 2028, and where that resource goes. But I guess it's kind of what you're seeing on that one.
I think police forces driving it as well. I think one frustration I have with police and crime commissioners, not the ones I've mentioned necessarily, is that there's all, you know, well, that's operational. We don't deal with operational issues, operational decisions for police. Well, all policing is operational, isn't it? I mean, it all comes down to what's happening on the ground. So, you know, having those police forces more accessible, more accountable, more engaging with local businesses might be a better outcome. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. And so the next area that we have actually heard something about over the weekend is related to all of this, actually, is the illicit trade and new measures to tackle the illicit trade, specifically on vapes. Ed, why is the government taking a specific interest in this now? And do you think it'll be enough to make a difference?
I think it's because it's front of mind for people, actually, in communities. They see lots of shops in their communities, lots of trade around vape and illegal activity, and it sort of hurts their high streets. It makes them feel unsafe, and that's a big part of the government's agenda, isn't it? Trying to push people to feel safer in their communities and do more to get police and trading standards and others to do that. So I think it is actually a drive that's part of their Safer Streets mission, and this is part of it, to make people feel better about the high streets. At the same time, of course, we have got the vape duty, a new vape duty being introduced in 1st of October 2026, £2.20 per 10 mils of vape liquid. So HMRC also have an interest in making sure that there is enforcement activity on the ground for them to protect that income as a government. And in many ways, that's a good, positive thing, because there's more focus, more enforcement resource on the ground to address this, because we know from talking to retailers, this is such a frustration. The customers come into store and they walk out because they can get the product that they want somewhere else down the street. And those businesses that are engaged in that illegal activity are probably doing lots of other things that are not great in that community to have as well. So I think it's frustration that comes up right from the constituency, but also there's a structural change in how the taxes around these products are going to work. That means that they need to invest more in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. James, so more fines, more powers. We've talked in the past about other product areas and enforcement being a bit of a theoretical discussion right now, because of how stretched trading standards are. With HMRC, as I'd said, getting more involved in this, more engaged in this, they've got skin in the game now. They don't want to lose that tax out to illegal sellers. What needs to be done at a local level to actually make this work and to give responsible retailers the backup that they need?
Yeah, I mean, it's so many things, but I think HMRC working with local trading standards is really important. More resource for trading standards to play their part. And of course, we talked about the neighbourhood police a moment ago, neighbourhood police being involved in that as well. In most cases, authorities on the ground know who these dodgy retailers are, these dodgy outlets are, online outlets and so on. And they just don't feel they have the resource to tackle them. And there's almost a sense that they're playing whack-a-mole when they do. They just pop up elsewhere and they can't really make a dent on the problem. So we need a change to that. It's very similar to the dynamics really to shock crime. We talk about same offenders. Well, it's kind of the same offenders, albeit they're different here. And often these people are also selling stolen products, by the way. It's not just illegal products. So, you know, I think it's that partnership working, but the really practical basis. And I think you alluded to it as well in terms of national policy making. I think, you know, what frustrates me the most is when you have discussions on regulation, and a lot of those are legitimate. I think we start from the point of view of these legitimate debates. We have to debate where that regulation should be. But then you know that there's a market, an illegal market, which has absolutely, it's completely irrelevant, that regulation. It has nothing to do. So you've got two problems. One is legitimate operators, that's our members, being undercut by those operators. But also, you're completely undermining the objectives, whether that's about health or about crime prevention, all those things that the regulations are there to do, just being undermined and being they're useless in that respect. So, you know, I just think there's, you know, we really hope that this is, and I am optimistic, actually. I do think this is one of the first steps towards just a much better enforcement regime, and hopefully government getting it, that in terms of supporting businesses and thus supporting growth, in terms of trying to maximise the income that should be coming into the Treasury, so they don't have to take it off people in terms of income tax or from businesses and national insurance, whatever else it might be. This is really important. This isn't some sort of add-on or inconvenient, you know, application problem. This is really, really crucial to making any budget actually work in practice.
Yeah, and we know from tobacco and others that the duty loss is in the billions. It's not a small number. So getting on top of that is a big difference. And on duty and all the duty rates that we're talking about around the budget, one of the big question marks we've got is around fuel duty and EV drivers and what could happen there. There hasn't been an increase in fuel duty since March 2010, and the temporary 5p cut in fuel duty that was put in place in 2022, when some petrol prices reached the £2 a litre mark, is scheduled to expire in 2026. Ed, does the Chancellor have any room to work with here? Are we expecting that to be extended? Is that going to feel like an increase? Is fuel duty just too toxic to touch at this point?
All of those things. I think it's certainly probably one that's on the table, and the Treasury are considering, because it can raise a great deal of revenue by unfreezing the duty. I think actually how it might be framed is in a wider consultation about the duty in a longer term perspective, because they're looking also at EV drivers having a per mile road tax,
sure.
Say 3 to 9 pence per mile, depending on the weight of your vehicle. And I think there will be a consultation launched on that. That's been sort of widely trailed as a discussion that they're going to have. So I wonder if they merge the two together to have the conversation. But given all the challenges we've talked about in terms of the fiscal hole, I think fuel tax is one they're going to have to look at before they run out of time. Because of course, by 2035, they're going to be banning the sale of internal combustion engine vehicles as well. So now's the time for them to have the difficult conversations, both in terms of the policy, but also probably the electoral cycle. Because I think it's not just the numbers that are on the mind, it's also the political dynamics, particularly for parties like Reform, who are going to jump on this, and it's always going to be framed as an attack on the driver.
And perhaps on the other side of things, on the Green Party, and perhaps maybe not even going far enough. So yeah. a very difficult balance to strike there. Just on other duty rates, tobacco, alcohol, are we expecting business as usual? Obviously, the tobacco will be going up. Alcohol, there's been some sort of creativity in the past around cider and specific whiskies. Are we expecting anything on these other duty rates, or is the expectation that it's probably generally business as usual when that comes to it?
Certainly business as usual around tobacco escalators, those thresholds will go up. Obviously, there's a bigger debate they're having around tobacco and vapes policy, which suggests to move towards a 2030 smoke target. Wouldn't be surprised if you see those rates go up further again. Mm-hmm. Likewise, with alcohol, there's just been a big restructure around that. So I suspect there'll probably be some product specific interventions around there that are probably more around the wine and spirits than they are around beer. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that chancellors like to have in their pocket at budgets. So I'd watch closely on the alcohol, and I think the conversation so far has been a sort of RPI based increase around some of the alcohol duties. The other areas is of course the soft drinks industry levy, which would have the thresholds confirmed in that too, which, you know, practically means that retailers because they're changing the thresholds around soft drinks, would see a potential price increase coming down the line for products that are high in sugar.
And this one will be termed as the milkshakes tax.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
New products in scope. So there's a more of an operational understanding of what products are impacted and when for the pricing changes.
Yeah. Okay, so lots of cheerful stuff then so far. Usually at the end of a budget, after, you know, even in difficult times, there's a chance of a bit of a rabbit out of the hat, and that usually comes at the end of the speech. But we've seen plenty of times where actually when you get into the detail, the problems come in the document itself, and you know, on page 186, there's something that will have a massive impact and it isn't even mentioned in the speech. James, do you have experience of many budgets. Do you see any surprises coming on Wednesday? And do you think that'll be something that is announced or something that isn't announced? So sort of, is showing an empty hat actually good enough in this case?
Okay. Yes, yes, and yes. I think there will be some surprises. I think there always are. In a sense, the politics of a budget, the theatre of a budget, means there has to be something which grabs the headline, distracts, wrong foots, whatever you want to see. I think there has to be something which does that. So, and actually last year, even with the National Insurance announcement, the detail of that was not what we expected. Ahead of all the speculation before, it was not about how, in terms of the increase in the employment allowance, for example, and the balance between the rate, the threshold, the employment allowance, that wasn't actually widely predicted beforehand. So I think there will be some of these that either in the detail of the implementation or in terms of the big picture will be a little bit different. But yeah, you're right that the problem might be, and you often see this with budgets. I mean, this budget has arguably kind of unraveled before it's got to budget day. But I think, you know, to some extent, there's always speculation ahead of budgets. I think this idea that everyone's sort of wringing their hands about, oh my goodness, I can't believe that things have been leaked from a budget. I mean, where have they been the last 20 years? I mean, this is absolutely common, but I accept it's been extraordinary now, and it's exacerbated by the fact it's so late. I think it being so late before Christmas and Black Friday, end of this week and so on, and people making those sorts of decisions, you know, I think that I think that it's particularly sort of curtailed economic activity, particularly made people feel uncertain. And I think the timing is an error in itself. So I think there will be some surprises, both from the dispatch box, but also in the report itself. And that's our job, which, you know, Ed and his team really lead, to try to go through and find those things and to make sure our members are properly briefed, because it can be those small things. There could also be some positive things in there. And an area that I do wonder if we'll go back to a little bit will be around, you know, more about investment incentives. You know, remember the super deductor back in the day?
Super deductor
was great. Yeah. Super deductor call it better. That would be much easier to say. The super deductor. And I think that, you know, things like that. And if the government are serious about growth as an actual agenda rather than just a bunch of sound bites, that's the sort of stuff they should be looking at, ways of incentivizing businesses to invest, whether it's quite granular about investment in certain things, whether that's green technologies or, you know, apprenticeships or skills, whatever it might be, or whether it's more broadly than that about investment in business. That's what I'm hoping for, the thing that hasn't been discussed so much that could come up. And that would make eminent sense, and to create some of those incentives to drive growth. So I'm hoping there'll be more on that than has been trailed so far.
Yeah, there'll always be surprises in the budget. I wonder if one area is around the labour market, about make work pay. It's going to be a big part of the 2026 conversation. There's going to be tens of consultations around how they implement the employment rights bill, but also how they get people back into work, get people returned to work. And I wonder if there's any incentives in there for employers to help them bring people back to work, opportunities to stay in contact with people when they're ill, and support around that, and any tax relief around those issues might be something that would fit very nicely within the overall narrative around making work pay and getting people back to work, which is a huge problem for the economy, right? Because there's a big swathe of people not working that could be contribution to the tax base as well. So that would seem like a sensible place to go. I think the other area, of course, is that we're looking at the national living wage rates coming out, which retailers will be watching for closely. But overall, this is a budget where I think the budget document is going to be more important than the speech. We're going to be poring through the details to find out exactly where this is going to fall. So Watch your inbox for our analysis.
Yeah, you see bets on online for how long the speech is going to be. I think Rachel is probably going to get up and out as quickly as possible on this one. So we will be back on Wednesday afternoon to react to everything in the Chancellor's speech. And for ACS members, as Ed said, please look out for the full budget briefing in your inbox soon after the Chancellor sits down and the documents are published. Thanks for listening to this episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss out on another episode again.